From Tally to Cali,
it's time to wake up.
Wake up. WarChant.com is your ultimate Seminole sports source.
And this is Wake Up WarChant,
presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill.
One more Corner Pocket.
Now here's WarChant.com's Asan Hajivandi
and Corey Clark.
Wake up! What is up, everybody? It is Wake Up War Chants, presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill, Tallahassee, Florida. Coming up on today's show, Tuesdays with Tom, and talking coordinator press conferences. Wake Up War Chant, presented by the Corner Pocket Bar and Grill, Tallahassee, Florida, cptallybar.com, the website. Pull out your phone, camera app. Pew, pew. That's my shutter sound, Corey. It's not all that great, but hit the QR code, takes you right to the website. You can get your orders in online, pick them up, check out the lunch specials, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. daily. It's Tuesday. Tacos, Coronas, trivia. Treat yourself. What's up, Corey? How are you, man?
Good, man. Good. I would encourage everyone to go to Corner Pocket. Good food, really nice service and servers, cold beer, vodka, everything you'd want in this. Huge TVs, a big Vegas wall where you can watch all the TVs. Yeah, man. It's just There's something for everyone at Old CP.
There we go. WarChant.com remains your ultimate Seminole sports source. Also, somehow, beyond all expectations, logic, just defying it, still a dollar for an entire year. You can hop on now. They're 3-0. I mean, I don't know, maybe you want to wait for 4-0. Right now, according to On3, the ACC power rankings, the Noles third in the conference behind NC State and Clemson. What are you waiting for? Get over to the boards. Check out Henshaw's house. Check out Corey's work. Austin, Michael Langston doing recruiting, Gene Williams dropping injury information that you folks desperately crave, but no way, shape, or form will we ever get officially off the podium. So head to the website. It's only a dollar. It's only a buck.
Iris 321 as well. You should throw that in. You should throw that in. That's worth the dollar. Mm-hmm. I'll go ahead and say it. I think that's worth like 8 cents a month. Iris 321. That's how good it is.
Yeah, right on. Right on. Corey, I kind of miss you, man. I think, plug your ears, Ira. I don't want to give him too many ideas. Kind of miss you. Wish you were here. Wish you were here on Mondays when we do those press conferences. I think we need your juice, your cachet. I think it elevates. I think it elevates the room because I don't want to – we'll get to the injury stuff, I guess, at some point. What stood out to you? You wrote a story. Hell yes. Mm. Ira asking, I guess, coach, you're 3-0. Pretty cool. Again, third in the power rankings in the ACC, according to On3. Boston College this week's opponent, 13th out of 14 teams, everybody. So, sky's the limit. We're climbing. We're doing it. Ask him, I guess, last year, did you think this was possible? And he said, hell yes.
He said, you just spoiled it. He said, hell yes.
You and I don't like silence. I don't want to let it go on for too long, so I don't know if you're still there.
Understood. I thought that was an interesting point of that. It was a weird one. Ira by far is the best question asker in there. He always has insightful questions. He always has like a different angle to look at something that I think about, or anybody else really for that matter. I just think he is by far the most he's definitely by far the most consistent question asker, as in he asks a lot of questions. But he's got a different angle for a lot of them, and they're all really good ideas. That question, the way it was phrased, wasn't Ira-like. It kind of meandered a little bit. It started out one way, went back another. It wasn't as concise as Ira normally is. It kind of sounded like one of my questions where I just, I just say a lot of words at once. But it got a great response. And I think Ira's point, because I wrote the story afterwards, was it's not just that they're 3-0 this year, because of course, yes, he expects to win every week. But man, think about them being 0-4 last year. Think about them late in the second quarter of that Louisville game. They've lost to Jacksonville State. They got the tar beaten out of them by Wake Forest. And now they're down to a pretty average Louisville team, 31-7. And here we are less than a full year later, and they're 3-0. They've won 8 of their last 11 games. And we all know the 3 they lost was against NC State, very good team, without your starting quarterback, at Clemson, at Florida. Those are the 3 games they've lost in the last basically calendar year. They've gone 8-3 in their last 11. If they win this week, which they're a prohibitive favorite to do, they're 9-3. So I think that's the framing of that question. yes, of course, every coach in America, well, probably not every coach. I doubt Shane Beamer thought they were going to win on Saturday when they played Georgia. But you'd want your coaches to think, yeah, we got a chance to win this game, or we're going to win this game. But what this program has done in a calendar year, considering, and I would say, you know, I know Jacksonville State was the low point, but that was such a shocking, stunning, weird loss that I really thought the second quarter of the Louisville game was absolute dreadful rock bottom.
Okay.
You know, because I, you know, again, I've said this a bunch, but Ira literally said, I might have to do something else with my life. Like, and I, nobody loves covering sports more than Ira. But it was, you were covering an 0-4 football team that was about to give up 60 points at home to Malik Cunningham, not Lamar Jackson. Malik Cunningham's a nice player. He's not Lamar Jackson. And that's not a very good football team. It's not terrible. It's just not, you know, they weren't playing Alabama. This wasn't Bryce Young throwing to all those great receivers. And you're on pace to lose by 60 points at home. And then from that moment, the second quarter of that Louisville game until now, look, man, I think this is one of the best 20, 25 teams in the country. I think you could make that argument, right,
yeah,
Aslan? Eight and three.
Yeah.
Those three losses were all close. Now, Lord knows some of these wins have been close too, but they have completely flipped it. Where and I think that was the nature of the question, and it was a good response by Norvell, who always has good responses at that moment. But he said, "Yeah, hell yes." He goes, and you know, he even said, which I thought was really insightful and a really good line by him. You know, he was talking about, yeah, we've won some games since that Louisville game last year, but I'm still pissed about the. I'm still pissed about the ones they lost last year. Like, we had opportunities in that game and they lost. And then he said, which is that's the right tone to strike. And I think the best tone he struck was, and we're still not anywhere close to where we need to be. We know we're not. We haven't played close to a good football game yet. And I think that's what fans need to hear, because he knows, man, you are not coaching at Memphis. You are not coaching at Georgia Tech. You're not coaching at Colorado or any of these other places that would be cool with 7 and 8 win seasons. You are coaching at mother effing Florida State. And 8 and 3, as good as it is, and as much as a sign as that is a turnaround, 3-0, as great as that is right now, that is not the ceiling. That is not the goal. The goal at Florida State is the mountaintop, not, you know, base camp. You want to get to the peak, man. And so that's where I think he's striking the right tone with his fans and his electors, the people that pay his salary, essentially. His constituency is basically saying, yeah, man, we're happy. And he even said it. He's like, we're 3-0, yay. That's a direct quote. We're 3-0, yay. Like, just almost mocking it. Like, man, he wants so much more from this program than just to be happy with a 3-0 start. And I thought that was probably the best moment of Monday, in my opinion.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watching on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Yeah, I guess he could have done the whole, hey, man, winning's hard. I'm enjoying this. We should be enjoying this. But it wasn't that at all. It was, yeah, we got to get better. And everybody in that room knows we got to get better. So that's a good sentiment to have as a trap game sits in front of you here, possibly. Well, I don't know. I mean, they're 2-touchdown favorite. I don't think Boston College got enough firepower. But anyhow, yeah, it's still good to hear that kind of stuff. What about the rest of the coordinators? I guess we'll go with Alex Atkins maybe. We'll go in chronological order of who he had. He's also another – he's a good dude to talk to. I like him. Very confident guy. Just, this is what I do. Guys go down. I plug dudes in. Thing keeps running. What? Next question.
Yeah, I thought he was. I thought he was good as always. I love transcribing him because he's pretty succinct.
Yes,
to the point. Not a lot of ellipses with him. It's just, you know, one thought, about 25 words.
Jordan's a baller.
Done.
Yeah.
But yeah, he did say that Jordan's a baller.
Johnny Wilson's a problem.
Well, that to me too was like that. I thought that was a really cool moment too. Is him basically saying, "Look, Johnny Wilson is a problem for defenses. Like, it doesn't matter if," and he even said, he's like, he's going to get two guys on him. In the red zone, he thinks that defenses are going to shade. Now, obviously, they'll have a corner. They're going to shade somebody else over there too. Maybe just in regular plays too is what he meant. But I think he meant more the red zone. And he goes, he's a problem even for two guys. One guy, two guys, he's going to be a problem. But also that opens up things for other people, which it absolutely should. Like if you have a receiver, they have to shade. You have to give them extra help. It's almost like putting two guys over there, like teams used to do with Calvin Johnson back in the day. Mm-hmm. Man, that should open up everything. Yeah, I mean, it's 10-on-9 after that, and you have a running quarterback. You know, theoretically, if and when he comes back, you have a running quarterback, and you should really be able to take advantage of having that guy. But yeah, that was funny when he said Johnny Wilson is a problem. He is a big time problem for defenses, and it's like, yeah, no duh. He's a problem for the Florida State defense. He has been for 5 weeks. Certainly a problem for Louisville's defense. And I think if now with that confidence, I might be wrong. Maybe it was just one great game. Man. I think that throw against LSU in the end zone, I think now that he's got this Louisville game under his belt, that's a touchdown too. I just think now that he's made these kind of catches in games, man, I think he snags that against LSU too. And I think you might start seeing some craziness out of this kid. Really, honestly. So he talked about Johnny Wilson. He said Jordan Wilson's a baller. He loves watching him compete.
Jordan Travis, sorry. Wilson, thank you for your service, though, Jordan Wilson. Appreciate
Jordan Wilson, man. You were part of the turnaround, my man. Yeah. You were part of the turnaround. You got screwed on the offensive pass interference at Boston College. I don't know what to tell you, man. That play still makes me mad.
Lots of you.
Talking about Jordan Travis and talking about him in the present tense, as in I love the chance that I get to watch him do this. Not I love the chance that I got to watch him do that.
Yeah.
But more like I get to watch him do this, as in Jordan Travis is going to be around this season, folks. That was good to hear, good to see, because you're not going to get anything like that from Norvell necessarily. And then talking about the offensive line and you know, they have a plan for everything. Now, look, man, they are almost on their – they are really scraping the depths of their depth.
The light here. Is on. The empty light is on the fuel tank, right?
They are scraping the bottom of the barrel. And I don't mean that negatively as far as, like, these kids can't play. I'm just saying as far as the depth you had going into the season, you thought you had 9 guys, maybe 10, I don't know. But obviously you've lost 2 for the season, and bless Harris and Caden Lyles. One was a starter, one – might have started again. He probably would have started against LSU, I guess, because Maurice was still coming back. But he was probably a depth guy. But still, he was nice to have.
Absolutely,
club to have in your bag. Well, he's gone, and now we have no idea about Robert Scott, and we might not know for a while. So you are now Darius Washington. You've got your 5 guys now, and if you lose anybody else, well, then you're looking at Armella. You're looking at Estes. Then you're starting to play guys that have not played yet. Yeah. And that's where you start to wonder. Right now, I think you're okay because, you know, those 5 that you got up front are all guys that have started a lot of football, including Darius Washington. But, yeah, I thought Atkins was good about that, saying, look, I wouldn't be doing my job if this person goes down, this is what we do. This is our plan. And then you get them ready for practice during the week. So he was insightful too, man, as he always is.
How about my guy Adam Fuller? He didn't like I tried to – crammed too many questions in my one question. He ripped me, but it's fine. Me and Adam, we go back. Worcester, back in the summers, you know, and then we used to hang out at the vineyard.
Right.
Yeah, it was
right.
Awesome. It was wicked. It was pissa.
Yeah, I think he was rightly encouraged by what he saw in the fourth quarter and what he saw from his DBs. See, that was another good question by Ira, talking about the pass breakups and those guys winning one-on-one battles when you actually had to have them. And then, you know, he also talked about the missed tackles. I think that was his... that was the most frustrating part of that game, I think, for him, was the missed tackles. I think he said, 150 extra yards on missed tackles? Oh, but wow. It's also, how many of those were on Cunningham? You know, and right. That guy's tough. He's tough in the open field. He would make NFL dudes miss. maybe not to the level that he made Florida State guys miss, obviously, but he's tough to tackle on any football field in the world, one-on-one in open space. He's going to make people miss. You know, I think they didn't like some of the runs the running backs had, which was an issue. And then, you know, he talked about getting guys reps, getting Patrick Payton a ton of reps. You know, Derek McClendon got more reps than he's ever gotten. He talked about Leonard Warner playing a lot more than they expected him to play. He seemed okay with what he saw, but he clearly wasn't pleased with the totality of the game, but he certainly seemed pleased with their fourth quarter response because, again, that was, as you asked, I think that was your question, right? About what they looked like against LSU in the fourth quarter and then how they rebounded against Louisville. So that was a good sign, and hopefully moving forward, they'll feel really confident with a one or two score lead in the fourth quarter against an ACC team.
Yeah, it's like the common thread with all these guys, whether it's Norvell or Fuller or Atkins, none of them are even remotely close to being content with where they're at right now. I mean, I think Fuller even said as much as he's like, listen, we want to dominate. He's like, we want to take the ball away. We want to go three and out every single time. And I know, like, you realize you can't do that. That's being perfect. But, like, they are striving for something greater than what they've put on the field so far, which is, like, the exciting thing to think about. It kind of brings it full circle to what Norvell said. Like, we still haven't really put together our best or a great game of 60 minutes yet. So then you start thinking, you know, as the season starts going on a little bit further, and if these guys can stay healthy or come back, then, you know, you're looking good come late October, early November, when those really big games start coming up.
Yeah, and I think Fuller said that he said, look, we had three and outs, a four and out, and three turnovers. So that's seven really good possessions. And he goes, but the great teams have 12 or 14 really good possessions. And we did. And he said the same thing about the offense, like that the offense, you know, they had five really nice drives, but there was a lot of hiccups in there, too, and a turnover and a couple turnovers maybe. Yeah, that's right, a couple interceptions. And so, you know, he was saying that the great teams, you know, it's nice that they're winning, they're finding ways to win, but the great teams don't have 7 out of 12 good drives. They have 11 out of 12 or 12 out of 14 good drives or good possessions or good series, and that's what they're still striving for. And I think when you watch this team, man, we all understand it's not a great team. As I've made the argument, I don't know who is great out there. Georgia, clearly. Alabama, probably. I don't know that anybody else has proven anything. I'd say, you know, Kentucky, I don't know, USC, Ohio State, like those are the five that have probably done the most in the country. But you wouldn't, I don't know that other than Georgia, you would call any of those teams great. But, you know, I think this team is getting a lot out of what it is. And when you start building that confidence, man, all of a sudden, when you expect to win in the fourth quarter, not just, man, this is great, we're in the game, but you expect to win in the fourth quarter, that can be powerful. And I think that's what these coaches are hoping takes with this team. And you get to a point where you don't let Boston College hang around. You don't give them a chance and you don't give them hope because they do want to come in here and kind of just lay down. They don't, you know, maybe those guys expect to win. I don't know. I wouldn't think it with the way they played to start this season. But, well, they 1-2, right, Aslan? And the one win was against Maine?
Maine, the Black Bears.
So, you know, they're not expecting to come down here and win. So put it on them early. Do what good teams do, not what great teams do, because this team isn't great. But a good team kind of takes care of this early. And you kind of have a comfortable lead in the third and fourth quarter. That would be another, where we keep looking for these steps. And that would be such a really positive step for a team coming off an emotional win. You get an extra day rest, but coming off an emotional win, two really, you come in at home for the first time in a month and play well. Don't just play well enough to win. Play well. Kind of dictate terms of a football game. And I think that's what all three of those coaches, well, Papuchas too, for that matter. And I guess we'll get to him in a second because we got to talk about the kicker. Mm. But I think all of those guys are that's their sentiment. And it's the right sentiment, right? We don't think it's coach speak. It's not like Jimbo coming in after the Pittsburgh game and being like, well, there were still some things we missed out there. No, there wasn't. You just had the best quarterback performance in I don't know, football history to start a career. There was nothing that was missed. You guys maximized. That wasn't this. These guys are speaking the truth. There is a lot out there. They have not played their best football. You know, not just the kicking. You know, goal line calls, fourth down calls, third and short calls. Like, they scored 24 against LSU, probably should have scored somewhere in the neighborhood of 35 or 38. They scored 35 against Louisville, easily could have had 45. That's awesome that they can get that. That's awesome that they have that potential. But now it's a matter of maximizing it and reaching that. And so, yeah, they're. I mean, I don't get the impression at all that they're content. And we'll see today and Wednesday, and we're allowed to watch practice. But if I know Mike Norvell as well as I think I do, man, it's going to be the same hard practices. There is not going to be any let up from him at all.
Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers, Bucks Packers. Mac Jones, Lamar Jackson is a show of young guns in the NFL taking on the old guard. Nothing makes these matchups more exciting than having part of your rear end in the jackpot over at MyBookie. MyBookie has super contests, survivor pools, and a double deposit bonus that gives you everything you need to secure the bag, as the kids would say. Getting started, it's simple. Sign up today over at MyBookie. Use the promo code WARCHANT and you're double your first deposit instantly. That's promo code WARCHANT to double your deposit up to $1,000 at MyBookie. It's not your grandfather's bookie. It's your bookie. It's MyBookie. Put your money where your mouth is. Get rewarded for it. Begin your winning season today exclusively at MyBookie. The Noles still 16.5-point favorites. Take the over on that as well, too. I mean, put those two together. Parlay them. Have some fun out there, kids. Make some money. It's over at mybookie.ag. Use that promo code WARCHANT. That first deposit gets doubled. Yeah, kicker, though. Ryan's our kicker. Man, I wish somebody had the belief in me when I don't, like, in terms of, oh, yeah, Aslan, you'll get married and have kids, when there's absolutely no real basis for that.
I don't have belief in that, but yeah. I have belief in you and your job. Okay. I thought that's where you were going, not your relationship history.
Well, I'm just trying to think what we can make an equivalent to a guy who's, I mean, so he's 3-6 on the season, so it's not terrible, horrible, but it's not good. It's not great out there.
I feel like all those kicks were 25-yarders.
Yeah.
The kicks that have mattered, and it's always, Bobby Bowden used to always say that, the big one is the one he loses. Like, anytime he'd lose a game, it's like, oh, he can't win the big one. He's like, well, what are about the other eight that I wanted to get here? Those were all big. They would have been big ones if I'd lost. I think maybe the same goes with kicking sometimes, where anytime a kicker misses, it seems like a huge kick and a huge deal. But in these instances, they really are enormous kicks.
Yeah.
He did make one. He's made all his extra points. But those two kicks in that game, especially the second one against Louisville and the one against LSU that was short, those aren't, it's just – they don't – it's not just that he's missing, right, Aslan? It's that he's – they're not close. They don't look struck confidently. Yeah. Not that I run a kicking school, but a D1 kicker at Florida State, considering the names that have rolled through this place in the last 20 years, 25 years, to leave a 47-yarder short, and then to the ones that he kicks, the way they look, just the way they look in games, reminds me of when they used to have kind of off-the-radar teams on Thursday night, when you would watch Troy play Louisiana Monroe. And you'd see a kicker try a 44-yard field goal. He might make it, but it just doesn't come off the foot with the same authority, height, ball flight, end over end, that you see from the great kickers. And that's what – and I've said this since August, right, Aslan? Like, I've been as much concerned about the way the ball comes off his foot and the way it looks in the air as to whether he as much as I have if he makes it or not. And those two kicks against Louisville and the one against LSU, they didn't look right. He's not booming them, and they're hitting up the top of the post. They just don't look confidently struck. They're not hit like somebody that's a D1 kicker that has the kind of talent that Fitzgerald has, and he does have some talent there. But I guess Norvell's thought and Papuchas' thought too is, well, what do you want us to do? He's our kicker. We can't criticize him publicly. We can't like have an open audition for kids on campus. I know a lot of people have tweeted at me about going over to the women's soccer team, but they're busy. They're playing again. They're top 10 in the country. They're not going to loan one of their kids out for tryouts for football. But there's not really much they can do other than, I think if he struggles again against BC, and again missing making, obviously you want him to make it. If you don't kick confidently, if it comes off just crazy left, no height, gets blocked, then you might really have to think about a change. Right now, I think they're really crossing their fingers that all he needs, like Tate Rodemaker needed, all he needs is to see one go through from a distance that matters, and maybe that'll get him going and give him some confidence. And so they're going to keep, I guess, running him out there until that happens, because their thought is a good Ryan Fitzgerald, a confident Ryan Fitzgerald, is by far our best option. So let's not just give up on him and then hope a walk-on kicker can miraculously start handle this pressure and make the kicks. Let's keep believing in him until either he turns it around or we just can't conceivably put him out there anymore.
Yeah, the guy behind him has not been drilling him in practice either, everybody. So you'd be taking a leap of faith, and I get it. I know we're like, well, it can't be any worse. I mean, it could. It always could. So we're up against the clock with the magic of editing. Let's go right now to Tom Lang. All right, there we go. Whoosh, the sound comes in. Tom arrives valiantly into the conversation. Tom, we're talking kickers. We'll talk about a little bit more stuff. We got limited amount of time with you, though, but what can you do, right? You know, John Papuch, like, what do you guys want me to do? You want me to yell at him? You want me to do it for show? I guess, you know, Corey's point is you just kind of hang in there, kind of like a Tate situation. You hope that the next time opportunity does arrive, he can execute, and then from there you kind of start building confidence and things working themselves out.
Yeah, I mean, for me last week, just talking about it in pregame shows and the content we do during the week, and I said, I hope that his first kick is an extra point, because maybe that'll get some of the confidence going, because it was an issue. I mean, it was an issue before this game started, and then when he misses the one in the first quarter, I'm thinking that the rest of the way, Mike Norvell's logic on play calling and third and fourth down has to be the way it is for about like the 33-yard line to the 40-yard line if you're in plus territory. How far does it extend? I was thinking maybe to the 25, maybe to the 20. And then the fourth quarter, it just didn't. They're going to stay the course, it would seem. But I don't know what benefit there would be for Mike Norvell to not back his guy, Ryan Fitzgerald, even if there was going to be a bit of a more of a competition in practice. You might as well stand behind him. It worked for Tate Rodemaker, so maybe it works for Ryan.
I would say that maybe make it a real competition in practice, though. Yeah. You know, he talked about that even on Monday with why the receivers are so much better. And the way they block. And they talked a lot about the blocking, by the way, of Micah Pittman and Johnny Wilson. But he talked about, he emphasized how competition has brought that out. Well, I think the same thing is certainly can be true at kicker. Make that kid have to have some pressure in practice to go win the job. That would help. But I don't know if it would. I mean, does it matter even if you're awesome in practice? If it's a whole different environment when you're playing in front of 70,000 people.
Lacey's at home this week, so maybe that's a little bit more favorable to. Maybe he's more familiar
with
these uprights.
I think there's probably more pressure at home for that kid this week, honestly.
Yeah, there's maybe a different kind of feel in the atmosphere when you walk off the sideline, and if it's all right, 38-yard try, and you can feel whatever that electricity is in the air. You just hope that if he has to line up a field goal attempt in this game on Saturday, it is with a multi-score lead, and that way, whether or not he makes it, it's not the biggest deal in the world, but. I don't know if it's going to come into play for BC. College football is crazy, so it might be a big deal. But I think play calling on third and five might need to have an eye towards fourth and two, calling an offensive play for most parts of plus territory.
Yeah, especially any time you're outside, I would say the 15.
Right, there you go. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that's what my biggest problem with Norvell, and I thought he called a great game. It did a really good job, and I like the direction of the program, but we talked about this on yesterday's show. Third and eight, you have a chance to win the game with your 6'7" guy that they can't guard. Why in the world would you try to center it for your field goal kicker that you should not trust? And now it's a matter of just coaching to your team. And I think that will be the math moving forward until Fitzgerald earns his trust. Because, look, man, he can say everything he wants. He can't keep coaching like he's got Roberto Aguayo back there. That won't happen. He's a smart guy, and he likes to win football games. He doesn't want to waste scoring opportunities by missing field goals, but he has to say what he says publicly. But I do think it changes the way he manages a game inside the 35-yard line.
No, I think it has to, and it's not like Tate at that point hadn't proven that he could make big throws. The third and goal play, that's the only option. If there's a run option off of that play, it's blown up in the backfield. Everything else is covered. So it's got to be Johnny Wilson back corner of the end zone. And if they don't get it, I mean, I guess by what he did later in the fourth quarter that we're talking about, they kick it to the tight at 31. So that's a huge play. There's a lot riding on that completion from Tate to Johnny in the back, and he does. And you've got a chance, like you said, to go win the football game. I was heated in the watch-along. You guys who are listening to the pod can go check that out. I stand by how I felt. But, yeah, I mean – you know, when the stakes are higher, like there are so many positives, gobs of positives to talk about with this program, and that should get the lion's share of attention. But as Florida State progresses now, you need to document these things that Mike is doing in the heat of the moment, because there are going to be some high stakes football games if he continues on this trajectory, that his decision-making is going to be the only thing we question, not injuries, not depth of the program, not culture, not anything. And hopefully he grows as these situations continue to present themselves.
Yeah, it's a cool thing, man. We're 3-0 right now. 16.5 point favorite against the conference opponent. Who'd have thunk? Just kind of goes to show you how much of this turnaround is quite on its way. I mean, big picture stuff right now, Tom. I mean, I guess it's really good timing that they do get Boston College with all the kind of uncertainty we have right now with the injuries, because I don't know if it will come down to kicks, but who knows? You know, we'll see how it all kind of shakes out. But just, you know, assessing the way they played against LSU versus the way they played against Louisville, everything they had to kind of deal with, just how kind of excited are you for what this team can be here in the following weeks? And we mentioned at the top of the show, On Three's got the ACC power rankings. They got Florida State third behind NC State and Clemson, and it's, you know, it's probably hard to argue against that right now. Well, I think we should take it. I'm happy with it.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to look at it from a certain perspective, a positive one, you could say they were spotted. They spotted Louisville 7 points in the second half of that game, and there were a ton of twos on the field, and they still found a way to win the ball game. I mean, that's, and they needed to score 21 points or 18 points in order to win the ball game, and they did. That's really impressive, and that's where the culture helped win the football game for FSU. So that's the positive side of things, and it's funny how the schedule works out, because preseason I would have told you BC and Syracuse are about on the same plane, but I'm really glad that Florida State is not traveling to Syracuse this week. Mm-hmm. That would be a completely different beast versus having BC come to town. Again, college football is wild this year, so nothing is guaranteed, but if you're going to play BC, this is the week to do it. And so to the point, Aslan, I'm excited because this is the time that you get BC. You get a really good shot to go to 4-0 if it goes chalk the way Vegas is talking about. And you might get a couple of these guys back, because the way Mike answered the question in his Monday press conference has me buoyed. He would have announced probably if there was some season-ending news in the next couple of days. He didn't, and he said, I thought the reports were positive. So if you can skate by and get through BC, now you're having a ranked opponent come to town, Wake versus Florida State. Two ranked teams, Florida State for a chance to go to 5-0 ahead of their two-game stretch at NC State and Clemson. You're now in the national spotlight.
Game day coming to town. Game day is going to come to town, Tom. Let's stream it. Speak it.
Yeah, I mean,
get your game day sign ready, Tom. Get your game day sign ready.
There, I would make sure that it has the QR code of WarChant TV and WarChant.com.
That's right, $1. Yeah, can you believe it's just a buck? That could be the sign.
It's a buck in the QR code. There you go. Yeah.
I was going to say, I think, though, when it comes to him announcing season-ending injuries, if I've monitored this the last 2 years as well as I think I have, I honestly don't think it would happen until next week.
That's probably true.
I think the way he handled Bless Harris, he didn't announce that until after he showed that Bless Harris wasn't going to play. So if one of these was a season ender, I don't necessarily think he would announce it until the following week where that person is not on the field and is not dressed, and then he might address it after that. That said, I do agree with what you said. I think it sounded really good on most of those fronts. You know, I know there was a picture of Jordan Travis circulating on social media. Somebody saw him at a store, I think, and he didn't even have a boot on. He's just walking around in flip-flops. That's good news, too. So it does sound positive. If you guys didn't hear the press conference, and well, I don't understand what's wrong with you if you didn't. But he basically said he got – I can't remember exactly how he phrased it, Aslan, and I wrote it down twice. It was, he was pleased or encouraged by where the reports were on those guys. Is that what he said? I mean, that's essentially what he said, right? The reports he got back, he was very pleased with. Now, he didn't say who. He didn't specify who, because he never would. But that's, I think, what he said.
I felt very good about where a lot of those reports came back, and we'll continue to evaluate as the week goes on. I know they'll attack their rehab, their fighters. They're definitely going to work. That's crazy. So he's not even in a boot. Man, and I don't know, 4 days ago, I thought he was going to break his wrist punching the turf because it seemed like his life flashed before his eyes.
The body is a weird deal because I'm telling you, I was there in the spring, and we didn't report this at the time, but I saw Johnny Wilson go up for a catch and come down and immediately fall to the ground and scream and hold his knee. And this was like the first week of spring practice. And I'm like, well, they got to go to the portal again because they just lost their big 6'7" guy, and I thought he was done for the year. I'm like, he just tore his flipping ACL. And then I believe he was back at practice the next week. Yeah, so it, you, those reactions in the moment can sometimes be not be a a real great sign of what ends up happening. But yeah, I thought when he was pounding the grass, you're like, okay, he's done for the year. Now it seems like worst case, and this is complete speculation, worst case would be Wake Forest. Right? You know what I mean? And best case might be that he's playing this Saturday. And I will say this, if he can play, he needs to play. He needs to play. You can't do what Jimbo did against Wake 10 years ago and say, you know what? EJ's 50-50. Let's roll with Clint. We can beat this team with Clint Trickett, and we'll give EJ another week to get ready. And then middle of the second quarter, you're like, well, no, we got to play EJ because Clint. You can't do that.
Yeah.
If Jordan Travis is an emergency quarterback, Jordan Travis is your quarterback. That's my opinion. You're not good enough to take anybody lightly, except maybe Duquesne.
Thoughts, guys. I was going to save it. I was going to ask him on Monday, but I might save it for later this morning when we speak to him. I was just going to ask him if Tate's performance at all changed the calculus of how you evaluate Jordan's availability. Like, I know it's going to make him upset, but like. You know, but to your point, Corey, I don't know if like maybe you saw enough from Tate and you're seeing that Boston College doesn't have a viable offensive line that maybe you're like, you know, we're in a position now where we can make sure Jordan's fully, I don't know, you know, I don't, what would we think about maybe that thought?
Yeah, I think it's a fair question. I don't know that he'll give you an honest answer. He might redirect or give you a political answer, but I mean, how could it not, you know, if Jordan is in pain and he's injured. And because if it's, let's just say you're playing for the right to go to the college football playoff and Jordan is hurt/injured, you would ask him in that moment, can you do it? And that question might not even come up now on a Thursday or a Friday if Jordan is in that position. But Corey's right. If he's available and he's going to put on the uniform anyway, I think you play him. I remember that game. That was a little sleepy nooner at Wake Forest off of a bye week.
Yep.
And that was a disaster of a day all the way around. But I think that line, whatever that line is, Aslan, it's got to move a little bit based upon what you saw in the second half.
I do think that. I think that if the way Rodemaker played, you have confidence now that if Jordan can't – like you wouldn't want him to risk further injuring it when you have so many big games left in the season. Yep. But those games get less big if you lose at home to Boston College. They just do. So, yeah, great. You saved him for NC State. Okay, well, now you're 3-2. Or 4-1 when you should be 5-0. Like every game matters. But again, this is pure speculation. We'll certainly know more later in the week because we get to watch practice. If you're not practicing, maybe you're not playing. We'll see how all that develops over the course of the week. But yes, I do think the way Tate played gives you some confidence that he can handle it. But as I told Aslan yesterday, Tom, and let me know if you agree with this, like I think it's one thing to be thrown into the fire without even getting to think. Yep. We saw it with Xavier Lee every time it happened. He just goes into the middle of the Alabama game and looks like a Heisman Trophy winner.
Yep.
And then he'd get progressively worse and worse the more of the expectations were thrown on him and the more he had to think about being the starting quarterback. And I wonder, the one question I'd have left, well, there's probably still plenty about Tate Rodemaker, is how do you handle being the starting quarterback for an entire week? How do you handle the pressure that comes with that? How do you handle knowing that it's you? Instead of just being thrown out there and not even having a chance to really think about it, you have 6 days to think about it. And that's the next step in his development, is being able to handle that pressure. And there's nothing that says he would handle it great until we see him handle it.
Yeah, I agree. On Monday's JCS, I said the same thing, that the question is not retired yet with him. You know, it's different now. And look, I'm happy that Florida State's playing a home game for the first time in a month. I like being able to drive to the proceedings for a pregame and to go and things like that. And to be on a Saturday schedule. These are all good things. But in a way, I feel like there's more pressure when you go in front of your home crowd that's going to be of the 70,000 plus, 67,000 of them, 69,000 of them. Yeah. Nice.
Well, you think BC's bringing 3,000 fans?
I don't know. That might be the support staff and the parents that get up, you know, on the coach plane. Because it ain't
maybe Adam Fuller's family.
Yeah, exactly. His whole extended family. Yeah. We Irish have big extended families from the Northeast, so maybe. But yeah, in a way, I feel like there's more pressure with that. And so if he can handle this, though, then I believe the question is retired on can Tate Rodemaker handle things. It still was a massive step, though, for him to even do as much as he's done. So hopefully that's the thing that breaks the dam for him, and it, he never looks back again. But I agree with you. I think this is a second layer to the can he handle the moment deal, because what if he does throw a pick on his first drive? How does he handle that? Are you warming up AJ Duffy two drives later, or are you just laughing it off by, you know, again, two or three drives later? It'll be fascinating to watch.
War Chant Game Day presented by Zaxby's returns to the Hotel Indigo on Saturday. Do we have a full rundown of the day's activities yet, Tom?
We do. So at 4 o'clock, the cash bar and the buffet service will begin at Indigo. So if you show up before 4, I don't know that they'll have a whole lot for you. So just get there around 4 o'clock. It's the 7th floor. You wrap around. There'll be signage to show you where to go. They've got a cash bar. The grub is good. Aslan enjoyed yes. some last time when he did the pregame or the watch-along show. The show begins at 5 o'clock, and we'll be riding there till 7. And we look forward to seeing everybody out there. There'll be some crowd control this time because it was crazy for Duquesne. I can't imagine what it's going to be for a night kick. And I also can't wait because I'll be producing on Friday at Corner Pocket at 5:30 with Corey and Jeff for the War Chant Happy Hour, which is always a great time because you get to hang out with some Noles and talk to some War Chant folks after that's over too. So it's going to be a fun weekend here in Tally.
Aslan, will you be there for that?
What, Corner Pocket or the
– Yeah, yeah, CP.
Yeah, 3-0. Why not? Yeah. I'll sure. show up after sure, the. I don't. Hey, what? That's a very skeptical, cynical tone.
Well, I just figure you'll probably have something going on Tinder. The last minute adjustment.
I've got actually a carrot to dangle, though. We're supposed to get dedicated parking passes for Saturday because of anticipated overflow. So if you want to come get the parking pass, there it is, Aslan. There'll be a beer waiting for you or a choice beverage, whatever you want.
Really nice. Man, I like really that. Man. I like dedicated parking passes.
Dominic Robinson returns also to the watch along, and then the post game show with Gene and Tom also going off after the game. So stay connected to us. Head over to the website, warchant.com. It's only a buck. Seminole headlines, 1 to 3 o'clock since it's Tuesday, everybody. And watch the practice video. We'll try to get people in the shot that are practicing, and then maybe that'll give you some of the answers that you want. Tom, thanks for hanging out, man.
Awesome talking to you guys, as always.
He's Tom. That's Corey. I'm Aslan. Thank you so much for listening to Wake Up War Chant, presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill.